Hi, I'm Emily Hughes, and I'm a part of ECF. I have been a part of the CF churches since early 2006 when I was a freshman at UK. I'm honored to be able to talk about this today, waiting on God in prayer. This is a subject I feel really strongly about. About 2.5 years ago, I started to have some health problems that really disrupted my life and my ability to carry the things I had been carrying. They may be gotten slightly better, but overall they haven't gone away. So in this season, I have met God in new ways as I've desperately asked him to heal me, and I have been in a season of waiting. There's a book by Andrew Murray called Waiting on God. You'll hear me quote it a few times this morning because it's clear and good. He says, "It must be clear what we are waiting for. There may be very different things. It may be waiting for God in our times of prayer to take his place as God and to work in the sense of his holy presence and nearness. It may be a special petition to which we are expecting an answer. It may be our whole inner life in which we are on the lookout for God's putting forth of his power. It may be the whole state of his church and its members, or some part of his work, for which our eyes are ever toward him. It is good that we sometimes review exactly what the things are we are waiting for, as we say definitely about each one of them, 'For on thee do I wait.' We are emboldened to claim the answer. Why? For on thee do I wait. We know who he is." So in that spirit, I just want to take a minute and ask everyone to close your eyes and think about what you're waiting for. It can be more than one thing, but allow Jesus to speak to you. Okay, I hope that you were able to get some idea of what you're waiting on God for. But if not, just keep thinking about it as we move on. Specifically about prayer, prayer is where you really decide if you're waiting or not. So I think sometimes we get sort of thrust into these periods of waiting, and we don't really claim it as, yes, I am waiting. You know, we may be physically waiting, but I don't know that our hearts have really said, yes, I am waiting on God. So prayer, I think, is where that gets established and where you can decide and claim that with God. It's where you decide your posture towards God. Are you going to be like Mary or Martha? Are you going to sit at his feet with an open heart? Or are you going to focus on what you don't have and what others are doing without you? I think Martha was so focused on what her sister was getting to do without her that then she wanted everybody to be miserable with her. And so I think when we're in that period of waiting, like, it's probably not the most fun thing, but we do have control over our hearts, and we have the power to say, I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to sit at his feet and open my heart to what he wants to do. And then in Matthew 6, where the Lord's Prayer is, Jesus teaches us to pray. He says, "But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think they will be heard for their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows that what you need before you ask him. Pray then like this: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." As you can see, there is absolutely a spot in the Lord's Prayer for making your request known.
But it comes after a section on his will. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. There is a yielding posture to God. He also emphasizes, when you pray, go to your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. I think in praying, especially when you're in a period of waiting on God, there is such a extreme fruit that comes from praying in secret, that comes from being with your Father alone and making that happen. I think that that is how we get our hearts to where they need to be in this period of waiting. I want to emphasize the phrase, give him time, give him time. And I mean this in two ways. There's such a deep importance in both giving him time to work on our hearts in prayer, and also giving him time to work as you wait on him. So giving him physical, literal time each day, and then giving him time, you know, over a long period of time, being patient, giving him that time that he needs to do that work. You know, I think he is so gentle and loving with us that sometimes it just takes a long time to work on our hearts. We may have it done faster, but I'm not sure we'd come out how we needed to be. So I'm really thankful that he's so patient and that sometimes it does take a long time. But giving him time and trusting his timing, offering that time to him over a long period of time. When you set aside time, allow him to speak to you. And then write things down, journal, do anything you can to remember what he has spoken to you in that time. Allow your heart to be conditioned in the right ways by waiting. And I think we can see it, like if you start to write it down, and you write down where your heart is and what he's speaking to you, and then you keep doing that over a long time, and it allows you to look back and see, my heart has really changed. And so I think that it just helps you see what he's doing over a long period of time. It really changes your heart to wait in prayer. It conditions you and you start to become a different person. It changes the way you pray and it changes the way that you wait for him. So I also wanted to talk about how we pray. And I want to talk about pouring out your heart. So, perfect. Thank you. I want to talk about Psalm 13. It says, there's so many Psalms where someone is crying out to God, but this just seemed to illustrate what I wanted it to. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him, lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. I think that it is so easy. Just keep that up there for a minute if you don't mind. I think it is so easy to not pour out our hearts before him. We think we have to get our hearts right before we can even come to him to pray in some sort of reverent or proper way. I think we as women are especially likely to do this, or if we're used to being people pleasers, it can be easy to kind of pull back and just say what you think you're supposed to say in that moment, or to not even really acknowledge your feelings about something because you know how you're supposed to be feeling. But I don't really think that that's how the Psalms show us to pray when we feel that way. But I think that if we do, and if we pour out our true hearts, this is where the work can really get done. And that's where real change can happen in our hearts, in prayer with an honest and open heart. When your heart screams why, ask him why. When everything in you says how much longer, ask him. I know that these questions might seem rhetorical, and sometimes they are, but sometimes he answers them. Ask him to move. Cry out and tell him your pain. Ask him why he isn't moving. Ask him why he won't deliver you from this. We see this all over the Psalms. Allow him to answer you and hear him. Or he might not answer you in that moment, but he really might. And you can absolutely trust that he hears you, even if he isn't answering you in that moment. And when you're in a place of expressing utter desperation before the Lord, your heart is wide open and ready to receive and hear. Maybe not the exact answers to the questions you asked him, but you are ready to receive and hear what he would say to you. Like, I think when you really open your heart and you are honest with God, your heart is in a very vulnerable place and you're able to hear him better. So at the end of each psalm, where the psalmist is pouring out his heart to the Lord, we see him come out in a greater place of dependence and trust in God. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. That's where he ends up. So however we come into prayer, however we pour out our hearts, this is the goal by the end of it, to know who he is and really believe it. So even if our prayer starts to sound a little bit like an accusation, where are you? I think the goal in prayer as we pour those things out is to be reminded in prayer of who he is, to the point where we end up saying, I know who you are. I know you're with me. Even if you're not getting the answer you necessarily would like. I don't know. I think that's a pretty good answer. So when you are in a period of waiting on God, it can feel like you're on a sports team and you're being benched. The rest of your team is getting to play, and you're just stuck here watching. All your friends are getting married, but you're not. Or all your friends are having babies, but you're not. And all the other ladies are able to do such and such. But my body's not well. I don't have the energy to do all that. There's so many situations where you look around at other people and think, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And I don't think that I'm really doing what I'm supposed to be doing if I'm not doing what they're doing. But you are just as much part of the team. And so I think we have to speak to the lie that that when you're in a period of waiting on something, that you have less worth in the kingdom than those you see who are actually playing the game or in the game. But actually, the whole idea of a bench is false to start with. We are all in the game equally. And even if a lot of people seem to be playing basketball and you're doing something different, we're still in the game equally. When we walk in God's will, we have to trust that he has us doing what is best, the most fruitful thing for that time. So even if it looks really different than you'd like it to, or if it looks really different than what your friends are doing, if you are submitting to God and you're in his will, he has you doing the very best thing. And I think we can trust that. And I think we can just speak against the lies that our hearts would believe in that time, that that means something bad about us if we're doing something different or if we're in a different stage. I also wanted to talk about some difficulties you might face when you're waiting. Some days in waiting on God, your heart will be fully convinced of his purposes and his goodness, There will be a peace in your heart as you wait on him. But other days, you will have to claw your way there. Waiting on God can be so hard. And I wanted to make sure I talked about that. I mean, I think that you guys probably know that. But it is not always pleasing to the flesh. When you are at the end of your rope, or you feel forgotten, the circumstances get too uncomfortable, when it feels like he must not hear you, he doesn't love you, you don't deserve his goodness, or some other lie, it will be tempting to find another solution. It will be tempting to try to control the situation. This is what happened with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael. The waiting got hard, so it got easy to think that maybe God wasn't going to come through in the way that they thought. But it can be tricky if you are not really waiting on God in prayer. So many things will come your way that seem like maybe this is God's answer to my problem. Maybe this is what he wants for me. And I think that we'll only be able to recognize those Ishmaels or those temptations if we're wrestling through the waiting in prayer, asking God, is this what you have for me? Rather than letting our hearts be captured with false hope. And just to be honest, I've been there. I have, it's so hard sometimes to distinguish, is this what you have for me? Is this the way you're going to heal me? Because you want it so bad. But I think that we can't really move towards those things unless we've really met God around it. I think about the woman who had the discharge of blood for 10 years, and it said none of the doctors can heal her, and that meant she had been to all the doctors. And I think about that sometimes as I try different things. But and I'm not saying she shouldn't have done that. I mean, that was what she had available. But just that sometimes we try things, and then we try things, and we try things, and we let our going out on a limb and trying things be our measurement of, like, how good of a job God is doing healing us. But sometimes, also, there are people in our lives who discourage us from truly waiting on the Lord. They usually even have our best interest at heart. They want to help, so they're always encouraging us to try the latest thing that may be a quick fix to our problem, or encouraging us to do really anything other than waiting on God. I think sometimes this person can be just the most well-meaning and loves you so much, and they hate to see you in a period of not having what you want or not having what might seem best. And so they think of so many ideas and tell you all of these ideas. Well, maybe you should try this. Maybe you should do such and such. And it can be really tempting to think, yeah, I mean, they're right. They love me and they want what's best for me. And so maybe I should be trying those things. And I'm not saying you shouldn't try the things, but I think we have to really bring that to God. We have to wrestle with those things in prayer and see if that's what he's doing. Is that what he's doing in this period of waiting? I think that if we expect the difficulties while waiting on God, we will be prepared for them. We must keep our eyes open for temptations and Ishmaels and well-meaning advice. We need a plan for when those things push back against our attempts to wait on God. I think the best plan looks like daily giving him time. And in that time, feeling free to bring to him any of those ideas, hearing him, discerning his will before moving ahead with those things. Know him and be slow to move without clarity. We also have friends who do know us well and are with us in our waiting and can help us discern. I think one of the biggest fears that can creep in when we're waiting on God is that you won't ever see or receive what you're waiting for. I think anybody who has waited on God about something really important to them knows that feeling. Like, you kind of have to go there in your brain. What if this never happens? And we have to be willing to think about that, I think. We have to be willing to think about dying without ever seeing what we're waiting for. I don't think that's something we should avoid it thinking about, but I think we have to go there, and we need to wrestle with God through the feelings we get when we think about that. Andrew Murray said, "In everything, there should be a waiting upon God to receive what he will bestow, to see what he will do, to allow him to be the Almighty God." Ultimately, we trust him. We allow him to be the Almighty God. We continue in hope. He is enough for us, even without receiving what we are waiting for. And I know that that is a hard place to get your heart to, but I know that that time in prayer with him can help you get your heart there. I think it can be easy to sort of fixate on the thing that you're waiting for, and then it sort of makes everything else just kind of get blurry in the background. But I think we have to keep our eyes fixed on the number one thing, which is knowing God and walking with him. And that is our ultimate prize. That's our ultimate desire. And I think that if we can get our hearts there, then the waiting and what you're waiting for gets a little more blurry and he gets a little more clear. I think that this can also be a process of grief. I found a, you know, like, you may still get what you're waiting for, but there's a process of grief in knowing that you might not, or that you don't have it now. I have a John Piper quote that says, "Occasionally, weep deeply over the life that you hoped would be. Grieve the losses and feel the pain. Then wash your face, trust God, and embrace the life that he's given you." I just thought that was really sweet. I think that not only are we allowed to weep that, I think, and to mourn that, I think that God meets us there. And I think that when we do that, he's able to touch our heart in a way that shows us that what he has for us is so much greater and better than the thing that we're mourning for. When we get so fixated on what we're waiting for and how to get it, I think that we can miss God's will for our lives right now. We can't get hyper-fixated on the waiting. He has good things for us to walk in now, even if we aren't where we'd like to be. We must find him in those things. I think that we will get stuck in that period of waiting if all we're thinking about is not having that thing. Or if I'm just stuck in this waiting period. When is God going to give me relief? And while I do agree with pouring out your heart and saying those things, it's not our whole life. It's not our whole being. God has so much for us. And even if it doesn't look like that much to us, like, he knows what he's doing. He has the greatest plan for you and what you need, and he sees us. And so I think that rejecting that and saying, like, well, no, I can't really do anything until I get this issue taken care of is just pretty short-sighted. I think that we are pretty bad at waiting. We're not really required to do much of it in our modern lives. I think that he can see the long term. You know, we see the short term. We see what we don't have and what we want now. He sees the long term and what he's doing in our hearts. And he knows why. He knows why he's doing it like he is. And so I think it's a real thing that will probably happen if you're waiting on God, is you will probably get fixated on what you're waiting for. Like, hopefully not all the time, but it's a real thing where your mind, it's hard to not think about it, especially if it's something like an illness or something and you're battling it every day. I think it's hard to not keep your mind there sometimes, because it takes over it's hard, physically harder to focus on other things. But I think when that happens, we have to push into thankfulness rather than focusing on what you don't have. He knows what he's doing. He is a very good father, and he has given us so much. And I think for me personally, if I can pull my heart back there, it really does make a lot of problems go away. So that is a good answer for when it feels like you can't help but hyperfixate on the problem. And I think, you know, when we are in that period of waiting, a really important thing is having that time with him every day. And I've said that, but I think when we trust him with that time, it may actually lead us towards obtaining what we're waiting for. He knows what he's doing. We should allow the time of waiting to shape us and help us know him in a deeper way. When the waiting is over, you look back and you've been changed into a different person. And I don't think any of us would ever want to go back to how we were before. And I think when you give him that time and you allow him to speak to your heart and you allow him to do the work in your heart, that he can really move. And sometimes, because he knows what he's doing so well, that time of waiting will end, because I didn't bring the exact quote, but it's in the Andrew Murray book that a lot of times he has us in a period of waiting because there's things he needs to do in our hearts. That reminded me of the Israelites in the wilderness waited 40 years because their hearts weren't in the right place. And so that just encourages me to yield my heart more. You know, I don't want to be 40 years in, but... sorry, got my pages mixed up. Okay. So when we're wrestling through things with God in the time that we give to him, and we're coming to God and being very honest about the deep, difficult things in our hearts that are so hard, and wrestling through them with him, we allow him into our hurts and disappointments, and then opening our hearts and minds and allowing him to speak to those. I think we allow him to renew our minds, which will transform us in Romans 12. And the process of wrestling might take a while. There may be things deep in your heart that have been there for many, many years, maybe even since childhood, things that you believe about God or yourself that are not true, but they've been such a part of your reality that it's hard for you to see that they aren't true. And I think that when we give that time to him every day, he is so faithful to slowly chip away at those things and to show you truth. He has time. It might take days or weeks or years, but allow him to show you what's there and allow him to tell you truth. There's so much in the everyday of it. He is a good father and he knows how to gently lead you day by day into where he wants you. And I think that's what, when Shannon was talking about active waiting instead of passive waiting, it is every day offering yourself to God in that way. Seeing what he will do, seeing what he says, that active waiting. Um, One thing that I have been doing for a couple of years in my period of waiting on God is every morning I go on a short walk by myself to just pray and to get my heart right for the day and hear Him. And it's been really sweet. I think most of the life-changing things that have happened between me and God in the past couple of years have happened on those walks. And I just, I think that's why I'm really hammering home the idea of the everyday and the offering yourself up to Him in that way. It doesn't have to be a walk, but I think allowing Him, going to meet Him with the expectation of He's going to speak to my heart, and I offer it up to Him. He's going to show me a better way, and I offer my heart up to Him. I think going there with the expectation allows Him to work. And I think what I've seen is that it goes quicker and quicker. I don't have to, it's not like as long into each walk where things start going. And I'm just really thankful for that time. I'm really thankful for the way that He has used that time to speak to me, the way that He's revealed patterns of thinking I have, the way that He's told me truth about lies I've believed since I was a kid, the way that He's sort of broken open things in me that I've held on to. I tend to really hold everything in and not say how I feel or bother people, but He's really allowed that to break open, I think. And I see Him doing all these things in my life. And I'm not healed, but I feel like I'll take it. I will take walking with Jesus in a deep way over anything else I could be waiting for. And so I know that He's doing those things. And I do think that one day I will be healed. But in the meantime, I think that waiting with a sense of expectation, not just about what you're waiting for, but in that He will meet you, that He will be faithful, that He has not forgotten you, and that He cares deeply about His children. We have to trust that, and He's so good at reminding us. I wanted to close with this verse. Be strong and let your heart take courage, all you who wait for the Lord. Psalm 31:24.